for the City of Goleta on Monday, January 13th, 2014. Will we please rise to start with the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, Madam Clerk, the roll call, please.
Commissioner Dressler?
Here.
Commissioner Onan?
Here.
Commissioner Solomon?
Here.
Vice Chair Daniels?
Present.
Chair West?
Here. All right, thank you. At this time, we do have an opportunity for a public forum, which is a time for the public to come and speak on any item. But since we don't have the public here this evening or any speaker slips, we will move on to ask if there are any adjustments to the agenda this evening, Ms. Carmen.
No, there are not.
Okay. All right, moving on to our administrative agenda. The first item, if the clerk could please read that into the record.
Item one is the Planning Commission minutes for the Planning Commission meeting of October 28th, 2013.
Okay, any discussion on those minutes? No?
I do. Madam Chair, it occurs to me that myself and Commissioner Onan were recused for the Wells-Riker appeal and didn't come back for any of the rest of the night. We weren't here for the director's report or Planning Commission minutes, and we missed the adjournment. And I just want to make sure that that the minutes reflect that. I don't know how you do that, but it's something new for me. And then that's all.
Sufficient.
I'll keep it in your lap. To, you know, for what works.
Okay,
Thank you.
Commissioner Solomon, would you mind just reading into the record what you pointed out, just so people watching can see?
On page 4 of the minutes, there is a small note, but it's not really formal. It's not in the form of a motion or a vote or anything that really calls it out. I think that's what Vice Chair Daniels seeks, is something that's more obvious. There's just a small note here.
All right, then. Can I ask staff then how do you recommend that we can approve these minutes and that change can be made after, or is that a change that needs to happen?
We can make that change after as long as it's noted in the adoption.
Thank you.
Any other discussion?
No.
Okay.
I move to approve, please.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 All opposed? Motion passes 5-0. Moving on to the next item, Madam Clerk.
Item A2 is the Planning Commission minutes for the Planning Commission meeting of November 25th, 2013.
Commissioners, any discussion? Okay, then a motion would be in order.
Move approval.
Okay.
Second.
Second.
Right. Oh, sorry.
Thank you. We got a first and a second.
Actually, I was actually going to say first.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? And I'm going to abstain because I was not actually at that meeting. So the motion carries with 4 ayes and 1 abstention. Okay. Moving on. Tonight we have a staff presentation about the climate action plan. So I'll pass it off to Ms. Wells.
Thank you and good evening, Chair and Commissioners. For the last 2 years, staff has been working on implementing a requirement of the general plan to prepare a climate action plan and an energy efficiency action plan. Is my mic working? Okay, good. Yeah, I know, it's a little bit. The energy efficiency action plan portion of the requirement in the general plan was completed, and we adopted that document in 2012. So some of what you'll be hearing about tonight is repeat some of the things that we did for the Energy Efficiency Action Plan. Anyway, since we adopted the EEAP, as the acronym reads, we switched over to preparing the Climate Action Plan. And ICF International is our consultant on that effort, also assisted us with the Energy Efficiency Action Plan. And they aren't here tonight because this is just a presentation that an advanced planning planner, Andy Newkirk, and I thought would be helpful for you to give you kind of a high-level overview of the Climate Action Plan and some of the elements of the plan so that when you get it, the read on it will be a little bit easier for you and for the public who's listening. So with that, I'm going to start with just an outline. We're going to run through the purpose of the Climate Action Plan and then go into the details of the inventory. And I clarify that a Climate Action Plan is synonymous in this sense with a greenhouse gas inventory and reduction plan. So it's just a shorter way for us to say that. And then we're going to go through some greenhouse gas reduction targets and talk about different ways that we can reduce our emissions. And we also did a cost-benefit analysis, and we're going to run through a little bit of what that looked like and how we did that, and then a timeline so you know when you'll be seeing this next. So as I previously stated, the general plan requires that we prepare a greenhouse gas reduction plan or the climate action plan, and that's the policy and the conservation element of the general plan is very specific. It's probably a half a page long, so it's very detailed about what goes into a climate action plan. We're also following California legislation, two main things: the Global Warming Solutions Act of 2006, also referred to as AB 32, and that's a requirement to reduce our emissions to 1990 levels by 2020, and we'll be talking a little bit more about that later in the presentation. And then there's Senate Bill 2007, that was subsequently passed in 2007, and that requires CEQA lead agencies, like the city on most of our projects, must analyze greenhouse gas emissions of proposed projects and must reach a conclusion regarding the significance of those emissions, and about the lead agency may streamline analysis of greenhouse gases on projects if you have a climate action plan. So this project will enable us to do some streamlining. We prepared a baseline, and that's how you start all these greenhouse gas inventories, is you establish what is your baseline, and you need to pick a year. And we picked 2007 before the economic downturn just to get something a little bit more real life, or what we think has been and is real life. And that also compares to some of the local agencies' baseline. In 2007, we had 422,000 and some change metric tons of carbon dioxide. So MTCO2E, that's your, get used to that one, because if you aren't already. Anyway, this pie chart here is also in our Energy Efficiency Action Plan, and you can see the breakdown by sector of greenhouse gases, so you kind of know where things are coming from, and I'll go through that a little bit more detail in this table. So by sector, if you start at the top, your building energy use is our biggest emitter, followed by on-road vehicles, cars traveling within the city, and then off-road vehicles, like equipment that people are using, like blowers and things like that. And then refrigerants are also a pretty big source. And then our waste that we generate within the city is also our responsibility from a greenhouse gas emission standpoint. And then water consumption, wastewater, and agriculture have small but still important emissions that we can take a look at in our reductions approach. So as AB 32 stated, that we need to reduce our emissions in 2020 to 2000 or to 1990 levels, or to a baseline, which is 2007. We then had to kind of forecast out what our emissions would look like if we were to take our baseline and project it out as business as usual out to 2020. And we ended up having to do this two different ways. So this, we had to go back and do a little extra work because something really important happened, and that was the San Onofre's nuclear generating station had some problems and now shut down. And the reason that that's so important is it's nuclear is clean. It's very clean. There's no emissions associated with it. So if it's replaced with a natural gas replacement into the electricity grid, then our emissions will then go up because we had zero emissions coming from San Onofre before. And then the other scenario would be a similar to a nuclear facility replacement, and that would be some kind of net zero condition. So we had to break it out two ways. So we projected out to 2020, and then we had to set some kind of target. And again, this is all being driven by AB 32 and our general plan, but we're trying to get something where we can do some California Environmental Quality Act streamlining so our projects can build off of the Climate Action Plan. And then that would be to get down to those 1990 levels. And in our case, as the third bullet states, that we're getting down to 2007, which is allowed because that's our baseline year. And then the total reductions that you're going to see a lot of numbers, but that key number is the total GHGs, the difference between 2020 and then 2007. And then we have to reduce those down by some target number. So we did some target setting work, and what we have is a 10.8% reduction of the 2007 emissions by 2020. So that's what we built off of to get down to the 1990 levels, and I have a bar chart that might help you visualize that a little bit better. But of those 422,000 emission metric tons that we talked about earlier, that's 87,000. To knock it down to get down to that 2007. So it's 10.8%. It'll make more sense when you see this bar chart. So the bar on the left is our 2007 emissions, and the bar on the right shows how we're going to knock that down. So the red color shows how many reductions that we need in order to meet that 10.8% reduction, which is 87,000 metric tons.
Just one quick moment. I might have missed it, but you're talking about needing to get down to 1990 levels, not 2007 levels?
Well, right? it's the equivalent, so it's 2007 for us because that's our baseline. That's our benchmark year.
I see.
Yeah. And Andy, go ahead.
Yeah, so what we're looking at is it's a percentage reduction from 2007, and that percent reduction is what we estimate we need to get to 1990 levels. So when you're talking about the 10.8 reduction, that's based on – that's 10.8% reduction from that bar on the left. So if you look at the difference between – the bottom of the two dashed lines and in the bottom of the red box, that sliver, that's 10.8% reductions from the 2007 level. And so that it's our estimation that will get us to a 1990 level.
Ask a question. I'm missing the math here. 422,000 metric tons. Or in 2007, it's 325, or what is the number there?
I was missing it for the. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think there's a confusion. So one of the things that we need to make note of is we don't include stationary sources in this calculation, and that's because they're regulated under state and federal guidelines. And so as far as kind of jurisdictional control, we look at emissions in the city excluding those stationary sources. So the numbers used for these calculations are less than the total emissions citywide including those stationary sources.
I kind of glossed over that. I should have showed you that on this table of our baseline. If you take out the stationary sources, our actual emissions is 320-something thousand emissions. So since we don't regulate the stationary sources, we're not required to have reduction measures associated with them. So that's why you see a reduced number, but that was a good observation on your part.
So I'm still not seeing the math. So 322,000, 10% is 32,000. Am I missing, is my math, explain to me how we get to 87,000.
Those are reductions based off of our 2020 business as usual scenario. So it's how many emission reductions we need to get from where we go without any reduction measures. So this isn't compared to that 2007 number. It's compared to the 2020 forecast.
Oh, so we're forecasting to 2020, and then we're saying how much we need to reduce that forecast by emission control. That's how you come up with this 87th. I still don't see the. So are we saying that it's 800 and whatever metric tons, 830,000 metric tons, business as normal by 2020?
The business as usual for 2020, we have the two. One is 377,000. One is 409,000.
And let me, we kind of cut down on these slides. So we've had some workshops, and this was greatly cut down. I mean, there's like triple the amount of slides. We probably condensed it down too much, and ICF staff aren't here, and that's all these people do are run these models. And so you can get caught up in the numbers without all the other slides. It's hard for us to answer. If they were here, they could just answer it right off the top of their head. Because we always have to go back and get re-reminded on some of the details. But if you could just go with us on this, and we'll make sure that it's explained in detail and it's ultra clear in the climate action plan. I mean, we've reviewed portions of the admin draft, and it is actually clear when you read it, but it's just complicated subject matter, which is why we're having a little bit of difficulty. We probably over-summarized this presentation.
Madam Chair, I have just an observation of what I'm seeing here is that you did a 2007 baseline.
Yes.
You forecasted it to 2020 as if nothing happened. If we didn't do anything. And then you came up with a number there.
Yes.
Okay. And then so that's what happens. That's where you get without industrial sources your 377. Without industrial sources, okay? So then you said, okay, but we have to get 10% below the 2007 number, okay? So not 10% below the business as usual 2020, 10% right. Below the 2007 number.
Right.
And so then that's where you have that, if you go to that bar chart,
yeah.
That's what that red represents. The red represents the difference between the forecasted worst case scenario and 10% below 2007.
Right. It represents doing nothing and going back to your
to 10% below the 2007.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
That's what I understand.
And that clarifies it for me, Terry, okay. Because the baseline is just what we're using. We're still, and so we're taking that baseline and saying for 1990 levels, it's 10% below what we're using as our 2007
yes.
baseline.
Thank you.
Got it.
Now that makes sense to me. The math works.
All right. Thanks, everyone. Commissioner Dressler. And I just want to clarify that the reason it's being done that way is because of a state law. This was not something you came up with, obviously, but just to clarify.
That's correct.
Okay. Thanks.
All right. We'll see if we can handle this one. So we also forecasted a 2030 and are identifying a target. This is a little bit, we're not as solid on this, and we don't have to be, because it's a little bit more, the further out you get, the less control you have, and you don't know about your changing circumstances. For example, the San Onofre power plant. You don't know about what new technologies are going to be out there, what standards the state might be imposing upon the different sectors. So, but we do reach out to 2030 as a guide, and then, you know, climate action plans are similar to general plans in the term, in the sense that they're living documents, so they have to be updated when it's needed. The climate action plan will have a soft goal, and then we'll update and use that as a benchmark as we update it in the future. So I just mentioned state measures. In our reduction measures, we start with some state measures. And I'm going to let Andy take it from here. He's going to talk about how we specifically are identifying certain tools that we are going to use for that 10% and how we're going to get those reductions. And he spent a lot of time with our consultant on identifying these, working internally here with city staff. To make sure that these measures are realistic and manageable. So he's very familiar with them, but he's going to start with the state measures because they're the ones that we get without having to do anything because the state's imposing them upon the different sectors. So with that, Andy Newkirk's going to start the presentation.
Thanks. And I think this is a good point to point out that 2030 forecast and how there's a lot of moving parts in these reduction measures and what the state decides to do has a huge impact on the emissions locally. So you can see here, these are the state measures were included because they force changes in behavior locally, so they impact the emissions within the city boundary as well. So here we have advanced clean cars and low carbon fuel standards, so kind of fuel efficiency and car efficiencies, things like electric cars. Those will have significant impacts locally. The other really big one of the state measures is the renewable energy portfolio. So that's forcing SCE to become a little bit greener, and so contributing less greenhouse gases through our electricity use within the city. And then Title 24 is another important one, and the city, those are getting more stringent as we move along. And so the city adopted new Title 24 standards in December, and those will actually, the energy efficiency green building portion will go into effect in July now, the new standard.
Madam Chair, I have a question. I noticed that on previous slide that the fugitive emissions from leaks from refrigeration is a pretty large greenhouse gas actor here in Goleta. Is there, and I didn't see on this list, is there a proposal for statewide refrigeration control rule, or is that something that's going to be done locally, or is there any plans for that type of regulation?
I don't know of any plans. I can ask the consultant if he knows of anything. He works in the Bay Area, and he knows pretty well what's going on in Sacramento, but I don't know of anything offhand. I haven't heard anything through our development of the cap.
The reason why I ask is that those types of regulations are very common throughout Europe right now, and so it's not like they'd be I thought that they were something back in my previous life. I thought that that was something that was going to be one of the first things that happened, and I didn't see it on the list here, so that's why I asked.
We're keeping a list of stuff to go over with our consultant, and we also have a list of, like, commonly asked questions so that we can add to them and post them on the website, because there is a website for this project. So we'll keep asking our questions, and we'll record them. We may not be able to answer all your questions, but that's a really good question for our consultant.
So as you can see here, the total emissions. So under the two SONG scenarios that we introduced a few slides ago, there's a slight difference, in particular with Title 24, because that's about energy efficiency and electricity use. But overall, the emissions reductions from the state measures is pretty close, right around 67,000 metric tons CO2 equivalent. So that's a really significant role in the reductions that we need to hit as a city. And the local measures, providing kind of a pretty broad overview at this point of what our measures look like. These are kind of the general categories we have. The first is energy efficiency, and that really focuses on commercial and residential building retrofits and improvements like duct improvement, insulation, you know, just basic appliance upgrades, those types of measures. And so we really focused, and you'll see this when I explain the cost-benefit analysis, of providing information but also suggesting the market forces, you know, are advantageous for this type of activity for residential and commercial property owners within the city. We also have the category of renewable energy. So this focuses on solar installations of both existing residential and commercial, as well as future residential and commercial. And then another piece to that is community choice aggregation. And the next slide will address that topic a little bit further. The waste reduction focuses on diversion rates through the city's contract with Marburg. So the most recent Marburg contract increases the diversion rate quite significantly. And so we'll receive reduction credits based on the work that Marburg is doing to increase diversion. With water, under SBX7, Goleta Water District is required to reduce per capita water consumption by 5% by 2020. So we will receive the benefit of that. And most of that reduction comes from getting water from the state water from the northern part of the state. With municipal, this we'll just be incorporating in the Energy Efficiency Action Plan. So that's this, essentially the city's Municipal Operations Climate Action Plan. So through that document, the city has identified, and it's been adopted by City Council, reduction measures that the city can take in their own operations. So things like energy efficiency within this building, those types of behaviors. So citywide, it's a small piece of the pie, but it's something the city has worked hard to incorporate into their activities, and it'll be something that's included in the Climate Action Plan. The final main category is land use and transportation. In this category, the idea is reducing vehicle miles traveled through different land use measures, and a lot of this will be actuated through the new zoning ordinance, which we'll hear about shortly, and things like improving transit and improving bike use within the city. So it's focused on reducing those VMTs and the associated greenhouse gas emissions. And as we saw earlier in the PowerPoint, on-road transportation is a major portion of the city's emissions. So tackling VMTs from through different measures is an important part of the city's will be an important part of the city's climate action plan. And then not included here, but also we're working on some kind of off-road measure, working with Public Works to make sure we get something that's reasonable, that's feasible, but trying to do something to chip away from the off-road sector as well. But we're still working on that to make sure we have something that makes sense and something we can do as a city.
Okay, I don't know if any other commissioners have questions here. No? Okay, I'm just going to ask a few since we're here. I'm curious, where did this list come from? Was this just something from your outreach to the public? And
so it was mainly developed kind of an iterative process with the consultants was the main portion. They came up with lists of often common measures that cities can use to tackle the issue. And then we worked internally in the city to find out, you know, what different departments felt was reasonable, was feasible. And then we took these measures twice in the fall to public workshop and received feedback then as well.
Well, I'll just add a couple things. You probably already have these, but I'll just be quick through the things that came to my mind. As far as energy efficiency, I'm curious how Goleta's voluntary green building program is actually, if that's accruing benefits.
It's included, but as a qualitative measure. So it certainly will be part of the Climate Action Plan. But one of the difficulties with a lot of these measures is having data to support assumptions about reductions. So eventually we need to come up with a number of metric tons of CO2 equivalent that we're getting out of it. And at this point, we don't have good data about the Green Business Program to really have defensible reduction measures from them.
Okay, it's too early. Another thing, when you mentioned waste, I wanted to note that the city of Santa Barbara has a pretty amazing citywide compost program that I'm sure you probably know about that maybe we could learn something from the city of Goleta. And then I was curious how bringing state water in reduces greenhouse gas emissions, because I would think it would actually be the opposite. That seems very counterintuitive to me.
how bringing it in reduces it?
You mentioned that water, that Goleta Water District has, is going to reduce water use by bringing state water to Santa Barbara, which
No, they're reducing total water usage here, and I'm saying that the emissions come from the energy-intensive movement of water.
Gotcha. Okay. I'm with you now. Good. And then I guess that was it for my comments there. So is that the kind of feedback that's helpful at this point? Okay. Good.
So one measure that kind of feel deserves a little more explanation, you'll see in the coming slides how it can have a really big impact under one of the two SONGS replacement scenarios, and that's community choice aggregation. So that's local community energy authority becomes a purchaser of electricity for enrolled customers. And then the local utility SE delivers the electricity and handles the billing. Additional greenhouse gas reductions are gained if the community choice aggregation has a greener, non-greenhouse gas intensive portfolio than the utility. So we already are seeing reductions because because of the state measure requiring more renewables in the utility energy portfolio. So this measure would go beyond that state requirement. So there's regional interest here, but it's very much in its infancy. The first step would be feasibility studies, and it's important to have a large customer base to have the purchasing power of the organization to get this done. Within the state of California, Marin Clean Energy has been operational since 2011, and Sonoma Clean Power is starting this year. So it is something that is beginning, but there's not a lot of history behind it in the state. There is kind of some state support, some state protections for local jurisdictions that are looking into this. But it's still a long ways out because even the feasibility studies themselves are fairly time intensive. But especially under that natural gas replacement scenario for SONGS, community choice aggregation can really be the difference there, really kind of make up that difference in those added greenhouse gas emissions. So here is a summary of the metric ton CO2 equivalent reductions from the local measures. So you can see under the natural gas replacement, there's a much higher increase in reductions, and that's primarily because of community choice aggregation. But you can see that in each instance where you're really looking at electricity use, you're seeing increased emissions reductions under that natural gas scenario because every unit of electricity used is that much more greenhouse gas intensive under the natural gas replacement scenario. So you can see energy efficiency is, you know, several thousand. Renewable energy, obviously, community choice aggregation would be a big part, but renewable energy in general is also a significant local category. Transportation and land use, not a difference between the two scenarios, but land use and transportation are a real big reduction category at the local level. Again, that's reducing the VMTs, trying to decrease road travel. Water, over 1,000, and solid waste and municipal are also included there. So this is a lot of numbers, but this is kind of a summary of the reduction and the reduction goal, the baseline, that business as usual, that reductions needed. That's the total reductions between the 2020 business as usual and trying to get down to that 1990 level. As you can see, the 2007 baseline doesn't change in the two scenarios because we know what that was. We had SONGS operational, but the 2020 business as usual is what changes under the two scenarios. And that, as a result, that changes the reductions needed as compared to the 2020 business as usual. That third to bottom line, total reductions with all the local measures that we've looked at that we have on the table right now. And then remaining reductions needed to hit that 10.8 target under both scenarios. We feel we presented measures that will get us to the target. And then what our actual percent reduction is that bottom number. So under the zero greenhouse gas replacement scenario, with all the measures included right now, we'd have a 12.9% reduction over 2007 levels, so that would get us below 1990 levels. And then we're also above that 10.8% target under the SONGS natural gas, but heavily reliant on community choice aggregation.
Madam Chair, a quick question. I'm afraid I'm going to have to ask you to go back over the community choice aggregation definition again. Not the numbers, but what is it?
Okay, so it's essentially a local utility, a community run, that purchases renewable energy, that enters agreements to purchase renewable energy. So from a solar farm or, you know, some other sources. And then the local utility will transmit that electricity to the end users. So essentially, you'd have locally an organization, the community choice aggregation, like Marin Clean Energy, would enter purchase agreements for renewable energy. And then I think it's PG&E or PGE, I always get those two mixed up, would transmit that to the local users.
Do we have the infrastructure for that?
It's not the infrastructure. It's the, I mean, the public owns the utilities, the transmission lines. But basically, right now we just let SCE make the choices and deliver us our energy. Mm-hmm. But it would give the users the decision-making ability as to where we get our energy source from. So instead of relying upon SCE contracts, we would form a partnership with other jurisdictions, and as they did in Marin and Sonoma, and then you would buy your own energy on the grid so that it would get put into the grid, so you could choose cleaner energy as opposed to dirtier energy, so to speak.
Might the pricing be different?
The pricing is different. The pricing in Marin is not all that much different. It's almost the same. That they have the structure that they have now, and the longer that they go on and the more they mature, the prices drop down even more. So it's becoming more economically feasible for them to get people at a higher or more reduced level of greenhouse gases in their electricity portfolio.
Thank you. That clears it up.
Yeah, and I would suggest going to both those organizations' websites. Marin does kind of under that CCA, there's kind of three options. You're enrolled automatically in a 50% renewable energy portfolio, and then you can opt out of that into the normal utility portfolio, or you can bump yourself up to 100% portfolio. And they have a really good breakdown of different types of residential and commercial properties, what the rates would be for, and they're quite competitive. And I think Sonoma's come in just a little bit cheaper than the utility, but I mean, that's not to say that'll always be the case. But so far, the prices have been competitive. But locally, the first step would be doing a feasibility analysis to understand what those, you know, what we might be looking at in the future. But that's a significant process.
Okay, I'll just add in quickly that I had an opportunity to hear the woman who was the communications director for Marin Clean Energy. She spoke at the UCSB Sustainability Summit, and a number of people from the city of Goleta were there. I think Ms. Wells was there and some other staffers, Lisa perhaps. But it really was a neat story of how they made this happen, and a lot of work. But a lot of the legwork has been done at this point to pattern something potentially in other cities. So I personally am very happy to see it in here. So thank you.
That's exciting.
So a few slides on the cost-benefit analysis. This is something we presented at the second workshop, second public workshop on the Climate Action Plan. And what we wanted to do is provide kind of the dollars and cents of these measures to explain what the costs are, what the kind of upfront costs, the long-term cost or benefits, who bears the burden of those costs and benefits. So we wanted to kind of make that clear. In many instances, it shows that over the long term, a lot of these measures have a net benefit for whoever's bearing the brunt of the cost. So we include a capital upfront cost, annual operation and maintenance. So you can kind of think something like residential solar. What are you spending up front You know, what does it cost to keep these panels operational? What's the lifetime payback, and what's the net cost or gain per ton CO2 reduced? So in the Climate Action Plan, we'll have all this information laid out for each one of these measures. And it kind of informs, how burdensome these measures can be to certain users. Some measures we didn't do the quantification for. Some of them are supportive or qualitative. So like the Green Business Program, I don't think it's, not enough data, things like that. The CCA, we would have loved to quantify that, but that's its own significant process. And then a lot of the land use and transportation measures, it's very much site specific. So when you're talking about development, it really depends on the development itself. So we haven't done as thorough a cost-benefit analysis on those. And then what we'll also include in this cost-benefit is more qualitative analysis, what we like to call co-benefits. So for some things, there might be a significant cost, but there's also benefits like public health, quality of neighborhoods, those types of things that are hard to put a dollar value on where you can when you're talking about construction costs, something like that. But we also will consider those as we draft the Climate Action Plan. So some of the trends we have in this cost-benefit analysis, energy efficiency upgrades have the shortest payback and net savings. So there's obviously an upfront cost, but they have a fairly short payback period. Renewable energy, longer paybacks, but still a net savings. Then waste diversion, it's a net cost, but we don't include resale or net savings on a life cycle basis, so it's really the added cost from our board. Land use and transportation requires facility level assessment, so hard to summarize that category. And then various measures, like I mentioned, we'll have net costs, but don't take into account co-benefits. So something like bike network and bike parking, you can estimate how much it'll cost to improve the bike network, but it's hard to quantify the value of getting people, the health benefits of biking every day. Or with trees, you can quantify the cost of planting, but how does that change the feel of a neighborhood? It's hard to put a dollar value on some of those things. So in some cases, we don't do that, but we'll, like I mentioned, we'll include kind of those co-benefits and kind of, explain that it's not just about those dollars and cents for a lot of these measures. So a little bit about the timeline, kind of where we've been, where we're going with this project. We've been developing, the inventory obviously was used in the EEAP, so that's been developed a couple years ago, working, and then we've been developing measures with our consultant internally. And then this fall, we presented information to the public in two workshops. On September 19th, we introduced the cap, gave the background information, and introduced potential reduction measures. Some of the comments and questions focused on methods of quantification, so kind of the real methodology, the nuts and bolts of how you kind of come up with the numbers. And then also kind of things like jurisdictional issues. So one of the things that was asked about was how do you, which VMTs are the VMTs? So the kind of the methods used there. And then in November, we had another workshop where we kind of updated a few things with the forecast and the reduction measures, and then we introduced the cost-benefit analysis as well. So there are several comments and questions about the CCA, and then also a discussion about increased reductions over time, so things like that 2030 forecast or, what's next, things like that were discussed at that workshop. Then the plan development, so in May and June 2012 was the municipal EEAP workshops, and then the adoption in August and September of 2012. And as I mentioned, that will get it, those measures will be incorporated into the citywide climate action plan. And in September, we had our first public workshop, November the 2nd, January 2014. Giving the Planning Commission update. We plan to release a draft cap to the public in February. So we're working on that. We're getting closer to that. And then this spring, we hope to have Planning Commission and City Council consideration for adoption.
You can find the materials from the two workshops for the Climate Action Plan on our website, and I believe the Energy Efficiency Action Plan materials are still on our website as well. And the staff report includes a link to the Project Goleta website for the Climate Action Plan. So the more detailed PowerPoint slides about the measures and how we calculated out the different reductions are on the website. So I suggest if you're interested, take a look at it. It will also be in our draft climate action plan. So the material, like I said, will all be in one place in the climate action plan, but it's a lot of information to review. So feel free to review stuff now, and then you'll be that much more ready when we bring the plan to you in the coming months for a recommendation for adoption before we bring it to the City Council. And that concludes our presentation. If you have any questions for us, we're happy to take it. And I'm, like I said, taking, you know, keeping a list of kind of commonly asked questions so that we can post it on our website so everyone can benefit from an answer from our consultant ICF. And so feel free to ask more, and we will make sure that stuff gets posted on our web.
I have one question, Madam Chair, if I may, and that I think, and possibly, I mean, it was just you went over this rather quickly here because you didn't want to get into the specific numbers and methodologies and stuff. But I know that a lot of work over many years has been done with VMT, and VMT has never gone down; it's always gone up. And no matter what people did, VMT just went up. And over, you know, over a long period of time. And so I'm really interested in knowing in it being demonstrated in a pretty scientific way of how you're going to project a reduction in VMT. Because to date, all of the well-thought-out schemes of mice and men have not been successful at ever reducing VMT. And so I'd be really interested in some pretty hard analysis as to how you expect VMT to be reduced.
Great.
I do have a question as well,
okay.
Chair West. So in a summary, the state mandated actions over this planning period to 2020 are expected to yield 69 metric tons out of a projected 87 need. So am I right saying that three quarters of our reduction comes via state mandate?
But I want to clarify that it's not all just reduced VMT. It's improved fuels, vehicle miles traveled.
Oh, VMT.
So it's not necessarily that there are fewer cars on the road driving fewer miles. It's that that fuel that's going into the car is more efficient and not the car is therefore not releasing as many emissions.
But my comment wasn't related specifically to vehicles. So in the slide summary that you showed us, we are looking for a total reduction of 87,000, whatever that unit is, metric tons of CO2.
Yes.
Okay. 67?
Yep.
Of that supposedly will occur via state regulation.
Yeah. It's pretty common to have two-thirds to three-quarters through state action. And so one of the things about that where it gets really complicated in trying to do reduction forecast out in the long term is what the state does is really important. But things like the fuel standard, I mean, these are pretty significant things the state has been doing over the last decade or so. So they really have a major impact. You know, they impact the behavior, you know, locally when it comes to especially car use and the electricity we're using, what the state requires of the utilities is pretty significant. So it really really changes the greenhouse gas emissions of the electricity we use. Yeah.
So having that understanding in place, obviously it's a concern for us locally what those measures are that we implement and how that affects our community, whether it's the residential portion of our community, the cost for them to run a household, to build a home, or in the business community, what does it cost to do business in our community? Should we implement measures that are different than surrounding areas or adjacent areas that raise the cost of living or doing business in our community vis-a-vis an alternative, we can have a significant impact on the future of how our economy develops or survives, or how our citizens live. And that'll be something that I'll be very interested in, is what choices we make as a community may in fact put us at a significant disadvantage or advantage vis-a-vis our neighbors, even though we're all trying to accomplish the same goals. And that's something for us to be very cognitive of.
Thank you. I think that's really good input, and that was always in the forefront of the preparation of the Climate Action Plan, but you can make that decision yourself when you get to review it. The philosophy that we started off the Climate Action Plan with was similar to the Energy Efficiency Action Plan, and that is look at what we're already doing and look at what's already working and what complements what the state's doing or doesn't have anything to do with what the state's doing, like tree planting, for example. We already have a tree planting program, so let's build on that. Let's look at what's working and where, and let's try to build on that and to do things that are the least amount cumbersome or regulatory in nature as possible. So we looked at trends. So we looked at, for example, we looked at, well, how many people are putting solar on panels on their roof without us requiring it? And then we used that as the measure to project forward. So we were attempting to not intervene with what the state's doing, and to look locally here at what kind of has already been the practice. But again, when you get the draft, you can take a look at that. But we will make sure that that philosophy is captured up front early in the Climate Action Plan, because it really was a place that we were looking at this Climate Action Plan from, which is make it realistic and make it reasonable and the least regulatory cumbersome as possible. Thank you.
Anyone else?
Madam Chair. Yeah, I'm going to get back to my original question, and I gracefully stopped asking so we could get done through these slides. Is there or is there not a real and true baseline at 1990? And maybe this is me having missed out on some information at some time. But the 17 years, right, between 1990 and 2007, are you suggesting that that is similar and necessarily a 10% increase, let's say, in emissions, and so you want to gain that 10% by reducing at least 10% to 1990, in a guesstimate, if I will, and I'm not trying to be political. I'm just trying to get this answer, I guess those are my two questions. I mean, I'm still confused on the 1990. I understand 2007 is probably really good information with respect to where it was in the economy. I get that. But if the state is requesting 1990, I don't understand why you didn't try to find the levels back there. So excuse my ignorance, but I'm just trying to mull through my mind how you guys did this.
Thank you, Chair Daniels and Commission. This subject we went through thoroughly about 2 years ago, so I'm a little bit foggy on it. It all made sense then, but it's a specialty. It's an art, and we have ICF, and they could give you the answer right now and satisfy you. And I don't want to attempt to answer it because it is pretty complicated. And though they seem to demystify it pretty easily, but that the 1990 versus 2007 and the target and all that stuff, we're going to have them do a real succinct response to that specific question, and we will get that on our website and make sure that you have access to it. And I, like I said, I don't want to maul it and give you something, a response that has an error in it, even if it's slight, because it is important to get that one right.
Ms. Wells, I appreciate your help on this. Thank you.
Okay, Commissioner Solomon, any questions? No? Okay, anyone else? All right, then I don't have any comments at this time. It looks like, you know, a lot of work went into this. Definitely impressive, even though I know it was a shortened presentation, and I'll look forward to learning more when it comes back to us. All right, so we'll move on to item B2.
Could we meet Mr. Newkirk?
I'm sorry, I thought I introduced him. Andy Newkirk is a planner, a contract planner, and he's been assisting me with some advanced planning projects and Ms. Carmen with some planning projects, and that's where what his role is. So he's basically like some of the other contract planners, giving me assistance with a variety of projects, climate action plan, and that's Andy Newkirk right there.
Welcome.
It's good to be here. Thank you.
All right, then, can we have the clerk read the next item into the record, please?
Yes. Item B2 is a presentation on the zoning ordinance update.
All right, this is Ms. Wells again.
Again, good evening, Chair and Commissioners. The purpose of this presentation is to provide you with an update of the city's zoning ordinance project. And as you know, this new ordinance that we're working on will replace our outdated regulations that have been serving the city to date. And it will build on the foundation of the general plan that we worked so many years to create and adopt in 2006. So we just recently kicked off the project, and since the kickoff, we've had some public interviews. So we hosted, I think, 80 interviews, and then we had a meeting with you and gave you some background. Our consultant, Diet and Bhatia, was here and gave you the presentation, and then we had interviews with most of you after the meeting. And then since then, we have been working with our consultant on an annotated outline, and we're going to share that with you at your meeting on January 27th. And that's really when we start moving forward with the project, when you can start holding on to the outline, and then after that, we will move into a little bit more details and breaking down the outline into modules. And we also worked on a website with the consultant, and that's GalitaZoning.com. It was supposed to be up and running today. It's not yet, and we're still working those kinks out, so it should be up and running anytime soon. As soon as it's up and running, we'll do a press release so that everybody knows that it's available. I just have a short presentation because I just want you to understand kind of the looking at this project. This is a pretty large project and in a relatively short amount of time, so to try to visualize it in chunks, I think will help with the project as it unfolds. So again, the project website, I think, is going to be a really critical tool in this project because it's going to provide the public with all the information, historic and current. But I think equally as important is the e-listserv so that people can sign up to get notices and also can provide public comment through the website. So it's a clearinghouse is one place rather than the city's website, and then it can get, we don't have the e-listserv for the zoning project. So this will be our tool to be able to reach out to the public, although we still will use all the other traditional ways to reach out to the public, but I think we're going to get a really good list of interested parties through the website.
Live.
Oh. Ms. Carmen says it's live, so they pulled it off today. That's great. So you can get on it. There's a list of questions, commonly asked questions, that are for some detailed information that's on it. So I think you might want to peruse that website, and it's going to be a lot of stuff coming forward. So I'm glad to know that it's live. So we can talk about the website a little bit more if you have any feedback at our next meeting on January 27th, and then we'll get into the nuts and bolts of the annotated outline. And we will be releasing the outline to you in your packet, so you'll have it in advance, so you can take a look at it, but we'll go through it again in detail at the meeting. And then we will shortly be releasing a notice of preparation for the CEQA, the California Environmental Quality Act document that's required for this project. So that's going to go out too. So it's all happening here. And then, like I said, we're looking at this project in terms of three modules. And so this first module is administrative procedures. And I thought just to give you a highlight of kind of what's coming your way. And it's the permits that you're all familiar with, because that's what you see that are attached to all your projects. So the coastal development permits and the types of use permits, like the conditional use permit, all those things are going to be discussed. We're going to break down the procedures that we have now, and then there'll be some procedures that we'll lay out for discussion as far as going forward. And then design review and design guidelines. So we're not shy here. These are some big, heady subjects, and we're really fleshing out the issues and trying to find solutions or options to bring forward, so you're not just hit with these big subject areas and asked to bring us a solution. We're working to bring those to you for your feedback. And we'll talk about appeals, and we'll talk about enforcement. And then roles and responsibilities for the City Council, the Planning Commission, the Design Review Board, the Zoning Administrator. So those are big things. And then definitions are important, illustrations are important, and so we'll be talking to you about those as well. And we have a general plan policy matrix that identifies all the general plan policies, and there's a lot that sort of drive the regulations. And those are our tools. That's our starting point. So that's how we're proceeding forward. And where there's a real fixed standard, that's our standard. That's, unless we do a general plan amendment, we can't make changes to those standards. So we're going to make it really clear what those standards are. And again, there's the matrix, and we'll be loading that up on the website too, so that you can look at that. And we'll let everybody know when these things get posted. So module one is a big one. I don't know, Ms. Carmen, what do you think? Maybe the guts of a lot of the code.
All the different modules are really important. I think this is the one that the Planning Commission usually wants the most input in, because it is how you're going to review things, how the names of permits, how they will come to you, all of those types of things. We have a real chance here to make this the City of Goleta's ordinance. So if we want to, you know, we have permit names that we use, we can change them. We can modify things, and this is the starting point to start the discussion about what we really want to see.
Oh, did you have a question?
Yes, Madam Chair. I'm wondering if there is an example of kind of where we're headed that is worth reviewing, you know, something that you all as professionals think is a really, really good example of a zoning code that's on the web in other communities.
I think there's several, or there's quite a number of really good examples, but we're really trying to start fresh with our city, and that's why we hired Diet and Bhatia, because we felt like they could shift and really look at the City of Goleta and our uniqueness and craft a code that works for us. That said, if you start looking through a lot of codes, they're, you know, they kind of follow similar format if you're not a unique, like a form-based code or something like that, which is, we're not talking about being a form-based code. We're talking more traditional code. But I don't know if you want to add to that.
There, when we do code development, I think most planners look for the interesting and unique things that have already been done. For example, if we're looking at some new standards in relation to solar, what's a city that has done some recent work with solar installations? It would be the city of Palo Alto. They recently passed an ordinance that requires all new construction to have solar in it. And it's those types of things where you find, as you're doing your research, you pull different things out of different ordinances that you think might work for your community. I'm not saying that that would be something that we would want to do at this time, but it's just an example of some of the new and unique things that are out there. Cities that you know that function well, that you admire, you look at those ordinances and see how they work. And I think it's very individual. Everybody thinks of different cities as they function really well, you enjoy being in them, and then you take from those ordinances what you can.
Thank you. Chair Solomon, would it be helpful if you had maybe preparing zoning regulations, guidelines, or something like that? We can, if that's maybe something that would help you, we could talk to our consultant and ask if there's something that we could provide to you and also on the website that kind of guide you in on preparing the code that we're looking at.
Well, I think I can speak for my fellow commissioners and truthfully tell you we've never done this before. So you know, anything that you can provide to us that would help us do a good job, I'm sure would be welcomed.
All right, we will work on that, and I have no doubt that Mr. Diet doesn't have something already for you.
I'll just chime in here that there actually is one of us who's done this before. Commissioner Daniels has quite a jump start on the rest of us in this forum. But I just agree that for me personally, a definition of terms, because I can get lost a lot in, you know, what's a specific plan? What's this? You know, I kind of know what those things mean, but I'd love to have a really great understanding of all the terms that are going to get thrown around here as we go through this.
Got it.
Anyone else? Suggestions?
Madam Chair. Ms. Wells. Over the last 8 years, I guess, since the Planning Commission actually started, plus or minus, there's been a list of recommendations that this commission and other commissions have given staff, and I'm wondering if that list is in one place or in many places, and how you might have already gotten that list to the consultants, or if it's in a different module, or you know, it's just, it'll be interesting to know, you know, if there is really such a list, and if it really does have the requests that the Planning Commission had to put it in our zoning ordinance, if and when we were ever to get one.
Believe, I will check. I will double check and make sure that they have that list.
One item that would be on that list, if you can locate it, would be a flow chart for the roles and responsibilities of the City Council, Planning Commission, and so forth. What projects proceed in what ways? And this is something that we have been asking for about 8 years. Thank you.
Got it. So the schedule that's on the screen is the schedule that was presented to you at your meeting in November, and I put a blue arrow on there kind of where we are now. So we had a little lag here of quiet while we were working on a bunch of documents. And again, we're going to start with that first module, and then we'll have the two that follow, and then we'll go into hearings, and all that while there'll be workshops. So there'll be opportunities for the public. Though the modules will be the core of what it is that we're doing. So there'll be a lot of invites out to the public to make sure that they're alerted to this, to the fact that we're having these module meetings. So we're talking about, you know, maybe a year from now when we are getting to adoption conclusion, hopefully.
Madam Chair, a question. How will you promote the website? Is there actually a plan for reaching out to the community and getting as many people on that listserv as possible?
Thank you, Chair or Commissioner Solomon. We have a public participation plan that we're using with the consultant so that it lays out exactly who's responsible for what, and part of that responsibility of the city is to make sure that people know about the website. So we have our Monarch Press newsletter, we have e-blasts, we have press releases, and there's a few other tools, banners on the Channel 19. So there's a few tools that we have to make sure that people know about this project, and that's why our public information officer plays a role in this project as well.
Mm-hmm. Commissioner Daniels?
Madam Chair, thank you. Ms. Wells, I'm not a wonk, but I play one on TV. I am really excited about the schedule, I can tell you. I'm really excited. And can't wait for the rest of the process to happen.
I have to second that. I think, you know, this is something that we've anticipated, and it's really, I mean, from my point of view, the most exciting thing that we've been involved in since the general plan went through, and probably is important. So I'm very excited and looking forward to it.
Any comments from the other commissioners? No? You guys look ready. Okay, so I did have one question. Is there anything that we should be aware of as commissioners as we review current projects that are the applicants are going to be coming to us in the next year? Anything about this new zoning code that will impact our decisions kind of in this in-between time?
No. If an applicant is approved under our current code, that's the approvals that they live with and those conditions therein. If they come back for substantial changes, then the new code could apply depending on the level and what our legal team would determine.
Good. All right. If there are no more questions from the commissioners, then anything to add from the staff? No? Okay. All right. Then I'll go ahead and we're done then with that item, the zoning ordinance update, and on to the director's report. Ms. Carmen.
All right, thank you. So in front of you tonight is the draft EIR for Village at Los Carneros 2. A number of you had asked to see it. We brought it to you in hard copy. If you don't want to take it home with you tonight, your names were on them, so please leave that piece of paper in there so we know who has it and who doesn't. We don't know quite what meeting this will be coming to you at once the final is ready, but we are very pleased that we're at this point and getting these long-standing projects out and moving as far as the EIRs. We have a lot of applications that have been moving forward, and the commission plays an integral role in getting those approved, as you've seen from Rincon and Islamic Center and all the review that you've done of all the different projects that have come to you so far. In regards to all the projects that are moving forward through the city that have been in the pipeline for some time, City Council, as well as the Commission, had asked for a meeting to talk about projects and how they relate to capital improvements. So we had reached out to you to see what days could work, coordinating with the Council to have a joint meeting. And it looks like February 20th is going to be the date. That, I believe, is a Thursday. And so what it'll be is a presentation from Planning and Public Works related to all the development that's going on and at least in the pipeline now and how the capital improvements will relate to those developments. It'll be an opportunity for questions and hopefully a lot of answers. And we'll be able to give a pretty good view of where we've been and how long things have actually been in the pipeline. It's been surprising. for a lot of people to realize that, for example, like Rincon Palms, when that came to you, it had been in the pipeline for 6-7 years. So it's we want to make sure that folks understand what's happening, how things will progress to decision points, and what improvements in the future they can look forward to that would work with those approvals or denials or whatever it might be.
And that means at 6 p.m.?
I'm not entirely sure of the time. I believe it might be 5, but we will verify time and get it back to you immediately. And that's all I have for this evening.
Madam Chair, a quick question for Ms. Carmen. This is a burning question. I can't wait until I have the time to read through this. But I remember the project that came through originally, and frankly, it was a wonderful project. And one of the things that was really desirable about it was people self-help housing had a whole building in that. And I'm wondering,
they still
are
do.
They included?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
There
great.
Is a 70-unit project within this entire project that will be built and run by people self-help if the project is approved.
Thank you so much.
Okay, then, if Ms. Carmen's finished, then it's time for adjournment. Or Planning Commission comments are first. Any commissioners want to add anything this evening?
Happy New Year.
Okay. Can I get a move, a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
Okay, this meeting is adjourned. Oh, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, passes 5-0. Good night, everyone.